Oh, hey, Pete. Hey, you got time to play a game?
Yeah.
I got a little adventure I want to run. You want to give it a shot?
Sure. What have you got?
Let me get it out here. Here we go.
What was that?
What was what?
That sound we just heard?
I was just opening up the canned adventure I got to run for you.
Wait, a canned adventure? I thought you had something you made up you wanted to try.
Well, what's the difference?
Dude, I can read a canned adventure.
Oh, come on. I heard a lot of good things about this one. It's from Pizards. Everybody's talking about it.
Yeah, I'm not really into this. I'm gonna go check on my kids.
Come on. I want to go through it and see if it's as good as everybody's saying it is.
Well, you go ahead and let me know if it is, and I'll come back in for the second module.
I was hoping it wouldn't come to this.
Come to what? You opened another one?
No.
Then what was that?
That was a can of whoop ass.
From the Rule Zero Studios in High Bar Zoom, this is Rule Zero, the podcast for gamers to talk about gaming. All games, all gaming, all the time. Welcome to the conversation.
Welcome back. This is, yes, once again, Rule Zero. I am Chris.
And I am Pete.
And we are here to pump you
Up.
up. Okay. So, how are you doing, Pete?
I am doing well, Chris. How are you doing?
I am doing well. Thank you for asking.
How has the gaming been going lately?
The gaming is going well. I had a sensational game of Pathfinder last night.
No lie. Congratulations.
Yeah, I started out. They got to the near the end of the first module in the Legacy of Fire campaign, Adventure Path campaign,
Okay.
and they pretty much did the boss fight. I hate kind of hate to call it a boss fight, but that's really
That's
what it
what it
is.
is, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might as well call a rose in this case.
For the Battle Market, which is the central location of the first module.
Oh, okay.
And they have one more section to go through, but there was a lot of in character stuff for what was basically a big fight.
Nice.
So that worked out well.
Nice. That sounds great.
And we went quite late, and Sharon was able to stay awake the entire time, which was unusual.
I'm absolutely floored.
So what about you?
I haven't been doing anything lately. My son and I printed up a whole bunch of character sheets for new character sheets for Mouseguard. And we're going to sit down sometime this week and make up a whole cadre of guard mice.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
Yes.
It's always fun to make up characters because you get all of these story ideas going in your head all at once.
Oh, exactly. And especially if we can intertwine them, it'd be kind of nice to like maybe run a one shot with them once we've got them all made up,
Yeah,
Yeah.
and we're getting ready to go to Origins this year.
Yes, you are. I'm not going to be able to make it this year, sadly, but
Well, this will be the first time I will be taking the family.
oh, that's wonderful.
Both of them. Well,
Wow.
not both families, my wife and
No,
child.
I knew what you meant.
That's
I
right.
knew what you meant. I don't know about the listeners. Both of them.
And in other gaming news, I got to play test a new game that will be coming out in the next couple years.
Oh, yeah?
It's
What was that,
called
pray tell?
D&D Next.
Ooh, and how was that?
It was. I can't tell you.
Okay.
No, I
Would you
can.
say
I can tell you that
that you
I can
liked
tell you that it
it?
was fun.
Yeah, I was about to say, did you like it? Did you have fun? Because if you can say
I
those
did.
things, then
I can't really say a lot of system information
that's fine.
stuff. It's not fourth edition. That's common knowledge.
Yes.
What else is common knowledge is that they are using backgrounds and themes. The Wizards has posted this on their own website.
Yes.
Themes was something that I believe they introduced in the Dark Sun fourth edition version. It kind of aligns with kits from second
I
edition.
didn't get a chance to check out that Dark Sun, even though I'd missed the setting very much. I'd enjoyed it the first time around, so.
Well, I had been messing around with a concept. I believe I even sent it to you, called Fortes, which I was writing for 3.5 before
Yes.
Pathfinder came out,
Yes, you did.
because I really hated prestige classes. Because what I hated about prestige classes was that you gave up way too much, and you ended up not being a very good character at the higher levels because you took this prestige class. And if you took something because it was thematic and not overpowered, you ended up not being a very good character later on. Not being a very effective combatant, I'll say
I was
anyway.
about to say, yeah, you'd probably want to go for effective combatant in that case.
Yeah. I mean, you could be a wonderful, role-playing character, but if you're not in a campaign with where everybody else has such a focus on role-playing and less on mechanics, you're going to lag.
Right, very true.
So when Themes came out in Dark Sun, I kind of glanced at it and said, yeah, this is kind of what I was going for.
Cool.
And so I stopped working on Fortes. And then Pathfinder came out with Archetypes.
Oh, okay.
Which was more of the same. You know, they give up. They kind of swap out abilities, which I don't really like. I kind of rather like overlaying abilities.
Mm-hmm.
But it's similar. So,
well, that's cool.
Something for everybody there.
That's what we like to hear.
So anyway, other D&D Next impressions. Things seem to work really well, but they don't want to talk about any mechanics right now because a lot of things are going to change.
Which is fine. That's the whole point of doing an alpha test, right?
Yeah, yeah. And this was this was part of a friends and family test from Wizards, so it's not open to public playtesting yet, but I knew a guy who invited me to play. So.
Aren't you in the know?
Yeah, you know, I felt pretty special. But it was Mike from Sly Flourish. Go check out his site, slyflourish.com. Excellent blog.
I'm now just doing this is whetting my appetite to play this, I have to say. And if I could get in on the beta, I will definitely do my best to do so.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as the public play test goes out, I'm going to, you know, download everything I can and, you know, try to get a game together. But, you know, maybe we can Skype something.
Oh, that'd be fun. Or I might come down also. That's the other thing.
That'd be cool, too.
Yeah.
So that's my news.
Okay.
Or that's my gaming.
Gotcha. Yeah, unfortunately, like I said, it's been a kind of high dry season for me, gaming-wise. My friend Judd refers to this as game fasting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
I have had quite a few interims of not gaming much.
Yes.
Right now, I'm not playing much. In fact, I'm not playing anything at all. I'm running three games, and it's kind of tiring, but I don't know. With the sessions last night where everything just goes really, really well, and everybody's into it, and everybody's really having fun, and I can see, you know, happy people around the table. It just energizes me to do some more.
I understand.
All right, so let's move on to the news.
Okay.
It is time for the news.
So we're back with the news.
Yes, and what have we got?
I have got some very interesting information. I've had a couple of friends who are indie game designers go on to Kickstarter.com and put in basically pleas for public funding so that they can develop their games. Josh A.C. Newman did so to put out the second, I guess we could say, addition to his game, Shock Social Science Fiction, which became Shock Human Contact. Uh-huh. And everybody who contributed $5 to $10 got the PDF version of the game for free. And then the first 100 got a free copy when the book came out. And so along those lines, the people over at Shadowrun, their online development team, because they've been talking about putting on a massive multiplayer online game, they used Kickstarter to get the funding for it. They got $425,000.
My goodness!
To start up for their startup game.
That's an awful lot of money.
It is an awful lot of money, but I think it's kind of cool that people showed the sort of excitement for Shadowrun.
There's a lot of success stories coming out of Kickstarter, and you know, hopefully that's, you know, something that works.
I'm hoping that it continues to be a boon for the gaming community. Mm-hmm. Just in general, this is, to my mind, a can't lose kind of situation.
Yeah, I'm wondering how people find these things on Kickstarter though. Like, if you know, I say I'm coming up with I've got a card game about simulating playing a card game. Mm-hmm. How am I going to put that out on Kickstarter and get people to pay for it?
Well, I know that in the case of the indie guys whom I know, they went on to various forums and said that they were doing it, and then it kind of spread word of mouth. From there, another way is to use social media. Most of the Shadowrun development online development team did their pitching on either Facebook or Twitter.
Okay.
So I think that's just a great way to use social networking also.
Mm-hmm. I had a news item.
Oh, do tell.
It's not actually a news item because this is old news, but I wanted to complain.
Okay, please complain.
Okay. I got my case of Pathfinder Battles Heroes and Monsters minis.
Oh, okay.
And they're mostly good. I mean, they're mostly decent. But there's a couple of them that just make me wonder what they were thinking. And these are mostly the ones in the large series.
Okay.
Like, there's an ogre that really does not look that good. Like, there's a few ogres in the 3-5 mini series.
Right.
that just looks so much better. And I kind of had some high hopes coming into the Heroes and Monsters list set.
Do the Pathfinder monsters not have detail? Is that what makes them not?
They're just a little, I don't know, funny looking, I guess.
Okay.
I'm just not...
Aren't ogres by definition kind of funny looking?
Well, yeah, but I don't know. This is just not very impressive.
Okay.
And the troll just kind of looks kind of silly. It's supposed to be the troll from, I think, the first bestiary cover.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
But it in three dimension, you know, as a two-dimensional painting,
that's one thing.
It looks really great.
Yeah.
In three dimensions, it looks a little bit goofy looking. I don't know. It's got this big tongue hanging out and these big cartoonish three-fingered hands. And
oh.
I don't know. I think they could have done a better job on a couple of the larges.
Maybe you shouldn't have ordered the Subtly Ridiculous set.
Could be. But there are some others that I think are... kind of going to be the unsung hero of the set, and my favorite one is actually the dwarf fighter.
Oh, nice!
It's just a beautiful dwarf in a can, basically. But the detail on the armor is just amazing, and I'm sorry, I'm looking at the list now. It's an uncommon, but it's not a rare, and it's just this beautiful little figure.
Nice,
But by and large, I was kind of underwhelmed,
okay.
And maybe some of this was the fact that I was opening them one by one and getting some of the commons, getting a lot of the commons to, you know, in my face all at once, and you know, but some of them stand out as being really excellent. The half-orc barbarian, I mean, the figure is beautiful enough to make me want to play a half-orc barbarian.
Oh, wow!
it's a great little figure.
It sounds it.
Yeah, and there's a snake that's got some really weird colorations. It's red and black, but it's a really nice red and black. And I've never seen a snake that color. It's the venomous snake figure. It's also an uncommon. But it's a fairly simple color scheme, but it looks really good.
Rock.
But yeah, so that's the Pathfinder. Pathfinder Battles is the name of the minis set. Is the name of the line of miniatures. And I'm a little bit surprised because they're calling it Pathfinder Battles, but there's no game to go with it.
Interesting.
So it's not really battling anything
per se. No.
Yeah. But my other complaints about the Pathfinder Battles is that the premium mini is a huge black dragon.
Okay.
But I compared the huge black dragon to some of my other huge figures, and it's not really huge.
No, there's no reason to make the huge black dragon feel any jealousy here, okay? We don't have to be comparing size.
It's an inadequate huge black dragon.
It's terrible.
It's sad, actually. I'm a little bit confused about their marketing scheme, but apparently that is going to change with the next set. They're selling them in collectible packs. Of one.
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not sure. Let's see. It's a standard booster is $3.99, and you get one random medium-sized mini. Go ahead and say it again.
Okay.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, huh?
I was going to say, that's why I said, okay. Huh?
Because that was my thought. Well, when I go into a gaming store and I need one mini, I want to see the mini I'm going to buy. Now, as a dungeon master or game master running a lot of games, I want a lot of minis. I'm going to get the case. I don't care what's in each individual box.
Right.
I really don't. I want them all. I figure I'll get them all. In fact, I did get them all with the case.
Oh.
But when I have $4 in my pocket and I need one mini because I am a player and I'm going to go in and buy a figure for my game, mm-hmm. for my character,
right.
I want to see what's in my box.
Didn't Mage Knight or something do something along those lines as well?
I don't know because I never bought Mage Knight, but this is also a WizKids product. So
gotcha.
I'm not entirely sure. I guess my question to Paizo is, who is this for? Who is the customer who's going to buy one random mini?
The person who has money to burn, I guess.
Right. If you're going to buy one random mini, you're going to buy a bunch of random minis. Because as far as pricing goes, well, it's either one medium or two small minis in a pack, and you don't know what it is, although you could probably tell if you shake it.
Oh, gotcha. Right.
So it's either one mini or one medium or two small miniatures.
Or it could be a yellow sweater.
Sorry?
Oh, wait, that's Christmas. That's Christmas boxing.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So it's either one medium or two small. And
okay.
You don't, and they're completely randomized. So right. who's going to go in and do and buy one box?
I think this just promotes gambling amongst the young, quite frankly.
Yeah. If you compare the price, if you buy, let's see, four packs, okay, you've either got four medium or some combination that adds up to medium and small that values at four.
Right.
That's kind of comparable to the 3.5 and 4th edition mini booster packs that were randomized.
Okay.
So you've got 4 to 6 randomized minis.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, that's and you've paid say $16 for 4 to 6 randomized minis, but I'm a little confused about the single pack. I mean, I can't imagine any scenario where someone would go into a gaming store and buy one random mini.
I think that I think this is along the lines of when they were running Mage Knight and also for a while there for Heroclix, I think,
uh-huh.
that you could just buy a random mini and you didn't know what it was.
Hmm.
But you went ahead and spent the money anyway, you know?
Yeah. There's a vigorous singles market on the Paizo website. I mean, it's not like you can't find the figure you want. If I had failed to get every single mini in the set, I could have just gone on the Pathfinder or the Paizo website and bought the one or two I was missing. So they
right, you
sell
could also
them
have gone on eBay
on demand.
Or whatever, or Amazon.
And yeah, I mean, there's a secondary market on eBay, which did wonders for the 3.5 and 4E minis. I mean, I got a lot of stuff on that.
Mm-hmm.
And what I liked about that is I could buy, you know, a lot of Mook figures on eBay.
Right.
You know, if I wanted like 100 skeletons, that was pretty easy to find.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. So that's my gripe. That's my news about Heroes and Monsters. That's
right.
My observation.
And you're sticking to it?
And I'm sticking to it. You got any more news?
No. That's it for me as well.
I already talked about D&D Next.
Yes.
Pathfinder news is that the next adventure path is starting. It's now available in my download anyway, so which means it's probably okay. On its way to me in the mail. This will be the Skull and Shackles Pathfinder adventure path, which starts with the Wormwood Mutiny, and that is going to be the pirate adventure path. So once all six of those come out, I will probably start that with my group.
To this I say, yahar.
Or with a group anyway.
Yes.
That's it for my news.
Okay.
All right. It is late in April, and the Avengers movie is coming out in what, a couple weeks?
Yeah, 3 weeks.
You're going to be camping out?
I won't be camping out, but oops, I forgot to turn that off. I apologize. Let me get
okay.
This.
I'll wait here.
Okay.
We'll pause the show here.
Oh, I'm so dreadfully embarrassed.
Why?
Because I forgot to turn off the ringer on the
phone.
Oh,
that's okay. Oh, I have another piece of news.
Oh, tell
okay.
it.
Okay, I've got one more piece of news. This is where I'll cut back
okay.
in after the pleasant intermission music. My piece of news is that I have created an iPad case.
Oh, yes.
And I am going to post pictures of this up on RuleZero.com, RuleZeroPodcast.com.
Okay.
And I will let our listeners see what it is that I have made an iPad case out of.
Nice. I look forward to the feedback.
And I'm going to go to Origins, and I'm going to try to get it signed by Felicia Day and Will Wheaton.
Oh, cool.
And maybe Robert Schwab, if
nice.
I can find him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what he looks like. I know what the others look like.
Well, you can always do a Google search for him.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and I'll probably see, he'll probably be pictured in the brochure when I get there.
Yes, I would think so.
So I don't know. I
can't believe I'm missing out on this Origins.
You gotta go, man. You gotta go.
I can't. It's the same weekend as my niece's wedding.
I don't see the conflict.
I know
will there
don't.
Be gaming at the wedding?
But you don't have to deal with my sisters, so there you go.
That's true.
Yes.
I'm going to send them this podcast now.
Go ahead. They already know how.
Okay. All right. So that's family news. I mean, no, I'm sorry. That's my my home crafting news.
Yes.
Okay, so be sure and check out. I'm going to post it on a number of sites and show what the profanity that I have committed was. So check it out. It'll be worth your time.
Yay, verily.
Okay, so let's move on to the discussion part of our show.
Okay.
This is the heart of the matter.
Well, we got a lot to talk about tonight. We are talking about the subject of canned adventures, or also known as premades or modules or whatever. What else do people call them?
Sometimes they call them beer and pretzel games.
Yes, or published adventures or pre-pubs I think that's all the terms that I've heard.
Okay. I think that's right.
I'm probably missing some.
Indeed, you are the thesaurus of geekery.
Yeah, so there's that. And so what do we know about – what is your position on running a pre-made canned adventure module pre-gen?
Reverse Cowgirl. No, I'm sorry. My position on that is
– my favorite.
Mine too. I think that they're pretty good, actually. They're a very good source. They're a good resource for times when you want to run like a mini or a link between parts of your own homebrew and things like that. So,
I have heard more often than not these pre-made adventures described as the crutch of the lazy GM or DM.
I think that that might have been the case early on, but there are a couple of things that I think those critics don't take into account. Number one is the fact that almost all the modules or pre-mades out there started as con games. So they were meant to be played in possibly 1 to 2 4-hour sessions.
Most of the early lettered number D&D modules, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Was Keep on the Borderlands originally a con game?
From what I understand, B1 and B2 were not.
Okay.
But
because that pretty much taught me to play D&D.
Right. Oh, and same here. I mean, I think everyone who started gaming somewhere between 79 and 84 used Keep on the Borderlands as their gateway drug.
I don't think I ever played B2. I didn't play a lot of the original D&D modules.
You don't think you ever played B1?
I never played B1.
Right. B2 is Keep on the Borderlands.
That I played the hell out of.
Yes.
My first example game, the neighbor who introduced me to D&D in the first place, helped me make up a character and said, okay, this is a general idea of how you play.
Right.
Pick a letter between A and K.
Ha!
Naturally I went with A.
Right.
And he said, okay, you see a cave. What do you do? And I said, I walk in the cave. He said, well, how far in do you go? 10 feet, 20 feet, 30 feet? I said, I'll go. Does it keep going on? He goes, yeah, it keeps going on. Well, I'll go 40 feet in. He goes, okay, 30 feet in, you fall in a pit.
Jeez.
And that was my first death in D&D.
Wow.
Lessons learned. So that's modules. That's my first experience with a module.
Now, you see, I was introduced by three different guys named Chris. Chris Taylor, Chris Tucker, and I can't remember the third Chris's last name. And they all had basically gotten the AD&D books, and they wanted me to kind of come in and start really working it with them so that they could, I guess, basically beat up on me when it comes right down to it. But but they were, I said, I have no idea what this is. And they were like, oh, don't worry about it because we've got, you know, the box set and the stuff like that, and that'll get you rolling, get you the idea, and then we can move on to AD&D. And I went, okay.
Sucker. So,
yep.
Yeah, well, it's not like one leads into the other. I mean, that's like saying basic D&D is a gateway drug.
Well, I'd never played a role-playing game before.
Okay.
I had no idea what they were talking about. So they had sat there and said, okay, well, do this first, and if you like it, then we'll move on to the big boy stuff. And I was like, oh.
Mm-hmm.
So I considered the box set kind of the training wheels and then the actual...
Yeah, that's a pretty good analogy, that it was kind of training wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And the module was kind of training wheels for running a game and creating a game.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of saying, this is how an adventure should be laid out,
yes,
or this is how a dungeon should be laid out, or a cave should be laid out. And I actually played so many ways of playing Keep on the Borderlands. That one time we just played an evil campaign and we came from the caves and attacked the keep.
Wow.
We were just like, you know, because there was all these things in the keep were statted out and we never fought them. And we were like, we got to do something about that.
You know, it's funny. I ended up running B2 as a tongue-in-cheek mini campaign for a group of friends. And what they ended up doing was at one point they found the little evil temple that's in there. And they... they enlisted the help of all the statted people from the keep
to attack the temple.
Attack the temple.
Or you mean the good temple in the keep?
No, there's the evil temple in the caves,
Okay.
And so
that's what
they
I thought
enlisted
you
the people in
okay.
the keep to attack the evil temple.
Gotcha.
Base.
Yeah, let's play a game called Let's You and Him Fight.
Mm-hmm. Hey, as far as so I'm concerned, I'm going to throw villagers at a big baddie. Let them use up some of his stuff, and then I'll take him on.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine by me. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, it's good strategy, mm-hmm. you know, and it's kept many a PC alive.
Mm-hmm. It's kept me alive.
But I'm gonna play devil's advocate.
Okay.
And I'm gonna say no, modules are only for lazy GMs who can't be bothered to make up their own good stuff. Convince me that I'm wrong.
I don't have to. I'm just gonna say you're wrong. Ha ha. Well.
Touché. Well played, Cornell. Well played.
Of course.
Well, I'm convinced.
Why don't we look at some of the pros and cons of these
okay.
games, and then we can.
Well, I say it's lazy, so it's only so that you can save time on writing modules.
Or you mean writing a homebrew?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I don't think, to my knowledge, anybody's ever run a campaign based specifically on modules.
Okay.
Okay. I think that modules are brought in either as links, okay, between existing, you know, between ideas within an existing campaign. But you just want to take a break from the stuff that you're writing, and you need to inject some new blood into what's going on. You guys have been playing for 5 or 6 months, and you're hitting that plateau, and the way to stir it up is to throw in a module.
I wouldn't be surprised if people have played all module campaigns. I mean, the Paizo adventure paths, the Pathfinder adventure paths, mm-hmm. are designed to go from levels 1 to 16.
Oh, I'm sure. And
play is kind of hard anyway in Pathfinder and 3.5, et cetera.
Well, I mean, if you look at like the entire run of Temple of Elemental Evil that starts with Village of Hamlet and heads mm-hmm. up from there, that's designed
right.
to go from first level to 10th or 12th level.
Right, because it follows on with the slave lords and then the giants, right?
I think it skips from there.
And then the drow.
Does it go?
So, yeah. So it
And then.
So it goes from the temple, the T1 to 4 series, and then the A1 to 4 series.
Oh, okay. And then it goes to G1 through 3.
And then it goes to G1 to 3, and then the drow seer, the drow, D1 to 2, I think it is.
For some reason, I think. And then it ends with Queen of the Demon Web Pits.
Right, right.
For some reason, I thought that there was. That it didn't do the Slaver series.
Yeah, I think. Well, I don't know. I'm not sure if it's meant to fit in that particular place, but you could run that campaign
easily.
One to you know whatever Demon Web Pits is for. What 12, 14?
I think so. Or
okay.
Or 13, 16. It's up there. You have to be pretty hefty to be able to walk into Hell and or the Abyss.
Right.
And take on Lolth.
Well, one does not simply walk into the Demon Web Pits.
I actually was doing a little research for this, and I happened to run across an article by Lisa Stevens mm-hmm. from Dragon Magazine 200.
Okay.
That was from 1993, so it's about 20 years old.
Okay.
And the article is Making the Most of a Module, and I just happened across this while I was moving my Dragon Magazine PDFs onto my iPad.
Right.
And so she actually brings up a few of the things that I had mentioned to you in our conversation working up to this episode
mm-hmm.
that, you know, I'm taking the devil's advocate position that it's a time saver, and she actually points out in the article that no, it's really not.
Well, I think that the idea behind a module isn't necessarily that it's a time saver, it's an effort saver.
Well, she points out that all of the modules are designed by professionals who know how to construct an adventure.
Right.
So it's a very good instructional tool
and I don't deny it. In that regard either, which is another reason why you should play a few of them just to get the feel for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think you and I had talked about Tomb of Horrors before
mm-hmm.
and White Plume Mountain, and it really kind of gave us both a feel for what it's like to deal with traps.
Right.
You know, how you don't just fill up a dungeon chock full of baddies. You've got to think it through, you know?
I remember running Tomb of Horrors for a friend in high school
mm-hmm.
and it was just me and him, and he was playing two characters and I was actually playing two characters. I mean, you know, we were kids. It's what you do when there's only two people playing D&D. And I just remember Tomb of Horrors as being this massive ball of unfair death.
Oh, and it totally was.
just being thrown around the room.
No, it was.
And that's the first time as a DM when I realized I really don't want to kill these characters.
Well, I think that was also part. I think that in this case, DM stood for Dick Move rather than Dungeon Master.
That's pretty much. We're going to lose the clean tag.
And Reverse Cowgirl didn't do that already?
You know, all right, forget the clean tag. I think we're verging on explicit now. But yeah, anyway.
but I think that in the case of these guys being professional module writers or what have you, or adventure writers, uh-huh. campaign writers, again, a lot of the stuff I know for a fact G1-3 were all con games. I'm 90% certain that S1-3 were all con games.
Oh, I'm 100% certain the S series was all convention games. They were tournament games.
So, I mean, I feel like even if you're going to run a sequence and you're going to do Temple of Evil to Slave Lords to Giants to Drow to Demon Web.
Becoming a god, I guess, after
you
that.
You really become a god. You could become one of those, what did they call them in AD&D? Quasi-deities?
Demigod?
No, they didn't call him demigod. They called him something else. It was like, you're a hero who's so powerful that you should be a demigod, but you don't have immortality.
I don't recall hearing the word, but that seemed to be a lot of the gist of characters' motivations in first edition, in my experience. Yours may vary. Mm-hmm. That it was just kind of assumed that when you got to a certain level, you would become a god.
I actually had a DM wherein we had we had a series of DMs in high school. Our friend Ron played with some of them, but one of them, when you hit a certain level, if your intelligence wasn't high enough, your head exploded. Because you had just garnered so much power and information and stuff like that, that the human or the mortal brain could not take it. And you just went,
that's a silly thing.
Which was very, very funny, but it gave him fodder to like go back and rework some stuff and, you know, make up a homebrew. Okay. Another guy came, another of our DMs, and it wasn't really fair because we started out at like 10th level. Uh-huh. It was the first time that I'd ever played something where I didn't start at first level. We started at a 10th, and we played until we were around 16th, 17th, or 18th. I guess we were 18th level, mm-hmm. because the magic user became an archmage.
Okay.
And we had managed to find an artifact, and that was a big flipping deal, baby. Mm-hmm. It might have been the Code of Arnd, the Invulnerable Code of Arnd. And then the DM basically said... I forget who it was. It wasn't Paylor. I don't remember one of the big deities from the first run. But he came down and he goes, "Hey, you guys have done really great. We can't let this artifact stay in mortal hands. So, in exchange for giving up the artifact, we're going to give you demigodhood."
Oh, hey!
And so we all ascended, and we were given domains. But this was a time when we each had like a single domain kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
We were each given to, and then temples rose up in the lands, and there was much rejoicing, blah, 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 and those characters retired.
Yeah.
And then we started with a different DM.
Yeah, I don't know what you'd do, you know, playing. Well, they certainly don't write modules for it.
No.
Which is what we're talking about.
That's true.
Okay. Time saver, not a time saver.
No, but definitely an effort saver.
Yeah, okay.
Because I think
you certainly don't have to draw out all the maps. That's good.
Well, there's that, but there's also you don't have to populate anything. Everything's populated
right.
for you.
Right.
You know? And I think ultimately it just becomes I think that anytime you sit down to work an RPG, it's gonna be a labor. There's mm-hmm. there's no way you can actually save time unless you're willing to pick over stuff you've already done.
Right. I remember when I've run a few modules lately, and it ends up with me doing a lot of reading. Mm-hmm. You know, reading through the module, not just reading through the module to find out what's where in the module, but then rereading it as if I were the players approaching the module, mm-hmm. and like trying to figure out, okay, now if they do this, what's going to happen here? You know, what changes if this happens? You know, and also, you know, how can I make this, you know, more appropriate to my players?
Right.
Something that will affect them. Something that will touch their characters' lives.
Right.
You know, other than
I did it
in...
again, son of a bitch. Sorry.
That's okay.
Like I said, but for me, it's mostly an effort saver because you were able to read through something that was already done. You were able to tweak it for your players, rather than having to write it out all yourself. Maybe have a friend read through it or whatever to give feedback,
right.
and then go through and tweak it and then try to look at it from the player's point of view and stuff
right.
like that.
And it's, you know, making your own, you know, entire dungeon, it's right. it's kind of hard to think, you know, is this too hard for the players at this level?
Right,
have
exactly.
I made a challenge too hard?
Right.
Whereas, you know, the module writers, they're kind of, you know, they get paid to know what's the appropriate amount of depth to put in a module.
Right. What is challenging versus... too much,
right?
Kind of thing. And like I said before, that I think one of the cool things about modules is using them as a link in your homebrew.
Mm-hmm.
I was running a campaign called Invisible Sun, and we had been running for about 6 months, and most of it had been taking place in a valley that I'd written up called the Valley of Rhyme. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get the characters kind of out of the valley. Like, the valley was pretty much played out. Everybody was getting kind of bored of it. So they ended up hunting a guy who was a body hopper, mm-hmm. and they end up in this town, which was the town in this module called the Murder of Seven Points. And so,
okay.
So for two gaming sessions, I ran the Murder of Seven Points.
Okay. I actually linked a couple of, I took a break from making more stuff up in my world mm-hmm. when I was running a second edition campaign.
Yep.
And I ran, Cult of the Reptile God, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It was a first edition module. And the only reason why I remember it was a first edition module that I was running in second edition mm-hmm. was somebody complained about the monks.
Yep.
There were NPC evil monks somewhere in there.
Oh, by the way, in a prior episode we'd mentioned Ron running a campaign.
Yeah.
It was that campaign.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Because that leads into the one of the worst modules ever written.
Oh, we've got to find out what that is. Okay, so good things about modules.
There are many good things about modules.
Let me bring you back to Murder of Seven Points.
Yes.
You said that was pre-made, that was store-bought pre-made module?
Yes, it was actually offered online from the Wizards website as PDF.
Okay. You mentioned something about Hollowfaust.
Yes.
In the
yes.
notes.
Yes.
Is that where that was? Is that where that takes
no,
place?
No, Hollowfaust is actually, it's the City of Necromancers.
Okay, I know the source from, right, I know that I have all those source books, but I'm not sure what you did there.
Oh, so what I did was the players decided to take the left turn at Albuquerque and ended up in the mm-hmm. middle of nowhere, and I was kind of at a loss of how to link them back into the greater adventure, the greater story arc. And
okay.
so I threw in Hollowfest.
Just that was the next thing they ran into?
That was the next thing. That was the city they managed to come across after crossing a wasteland for 3 days.
Oh, that's cool.
Was they managed to find Hollowfest. And uh-huh. some people were horrified by it, and some people were fascinated by it. And
I liked a bunch of those Scardlands sources. I liked the city that had the golem over it. I don't remember what it was.
Mithril.
Yes, that's the one.
Mm-hmm.
So you plugged a store-bought world supplement into a world because you had nothing there already.
And there were some adventure ideas that came off of it too within the store-bought book.
Mm-hmm.
So
sure.
I found it to be very helpful, and it actually kind of helped me. It helped reinvigorate me personally. I mean, I think there's a time when after you start, and you've run long-term campaigns, so you know where I speak. There's just a time where you sit there and go, God, I hate this.
Yes.
Why did I start these people on this? Jesus.
And yep. That comes from, you know, a lot of exhaustion. And,
no, it does.
You know, pulling someone else's work and sticking it in your world can be a welcome relief from having to lay track in front of your characters.
And I think another thing that is even is just completely walking away from the campaign for a couple of sessions
mm-hmm.
helps. I mean, that's kind of what we were doing with Ron and his crew with G1 through 3 when I ran mm-hmm. against the Giants for him, was to give kind of Ron's campaign a rest.
Mm-hmm.
The guys had been playing in it for a long time prior to me coming back to upstate New York. And so I offered to run the first G1, and everybody jumped on board.
That's cool.
And it was fairly simple to run the hook and the line for it.
Well, there's a little bit of leading that you have to do to get them into the module. I mean, that's kind of a given.
It wasn't bad in this case because the way that I set it up was that, all right, the pitch was this. I said, you guys belong to a mercenary company called, now I can't remember what it's called, Falcon's, I can't remember what it was called. We'll call it Falcon's Crest.
Well, there's that there's that explicit tag.
There
thanks a lot.
No problem. Glad I could contribute. Oh, Falcon Signature. That's what it was called.
Falcon Signature.
Falcon Signature. And Falcon Signature, in this case, was operating in the Western Flannis. They were based out of Verbabank, but they had offices in Kjolland and a couple of other places. And so, the concept being is that these guys are mercenaries and that they're brought in as teams. Kind of like a Mission Impossible thing, where you're brought in as a group of people. And a few of them had worked together before, so they knew each other, blah, blah, blah. They get called in by Falcon. Falcon says, okay, we've got a situation here. The Giants are attacking caravans in Keelland.
Okay.
And I want you to, and we've been hired because Keelland right now is dedicating a lot of its military to fighting the humanoids in the southeast right now. They need help. We've been hired. Here's your job. Good luck, 007. Excuse me. And that's how that started.
I think you mixed your spy shows there.
I probably did. But anyway, so good luck, Mr. Hunt. There you go.
That'll do.
And then Falcon exploded in 5 seconds.
sounds really messy.
It could get very messy.
Yeah. Falcon everywhere.
But it also helped me, like, the little interim things, I got to play around with a lot of toys that friends had introduced me to over the years in the world of Greyhawk. Okay. So that was a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, that was, you know, like I said, I didn't do a lot of the modules. I also didn't do a lot of Greyhawk. It seems like almost every campaign I played in was a homebrew.
I found it very interesting. I mean, like I said, but again, I didn't play in many full campaigns for a long time. I played in a bunch of minis.
Mm-hmm.
But I've probably played in maybe 3 or 4 that have lasted longer than about 6 months.
Yeah, so anyway, other things about the, you know, we've been kind of focusing on D&D.
Right.
And there are published adventures in other games.
Very much so.
I remember playing one in Shadowrun, which I didn't really like very much.
Okay.
Because the one clue that we were supposed to find to progress the adventure, nobody really figured out.
Mm.
It's so we were kind of stuck. But it was definitely it fitted to the genre in as much as, you know, it's a Shadowrun adventure written for Shadowrun players, and that's something that is, you know, a very helpful thing to somebody who's new to a game.
Yes.
So while I didn't quite, you know, our group didn't quite figure out where we were supposed to go, we were all pretty new to the game,
right.
And that module did teach us the kinds of things we were supposed to do.
Yes.
Because, you know, after we kind of hit the dead end, the GM said, okay, here's a little help. You know, this is what the kind of thing you're supposed to do. This technology exists in the Shadowrun world. Mm-hmm. Your characters would know this.
Yeah, I think also,
this is the world you live in.
I think it's also a good bridge for a new GM in a system.
Yeah.
It gives them something.
Yeah.
I
just bought the Eclipse Phase rulebook, and I'm really interested in this system, and I would really like to run a game, but I'm not really sure on, you know, themes that are appropriate, the kinds of challenges that players should play.
Mm-hmm.
And so a published adventure for Eclipse Phase would do wonders for, you know, helping me get into this system.
Yes.
You know, as an example.
I gotcha.
So let's talk about the bad.
Okay.
Sadly, the module gives you as a GM a little bit less control without reworking several parts of the module.
True.
So if you want to say, well, this is not about this person trying to take over the world, this is about this person, you know, his motivation is really that he was unloved as a child, and he just wants the attention of his peers.
Right.
Well, that would change several things about the module, maybe.
Potentially, it could. I think when I retconned G1 through 3, I opted not to make the drow the big bad guys at the end.
Well, how'd that work out then?
It worked out just fine. And in fact, one of the interesting things about it was that the players missed some fairly crucial information and reported back misinformation to the King of Keelland. And kind of the fun thing about that was that now I can link them into Expedition to the Barrier Peaks.
Oh, hey.
If they want to play those characters again, I've got something new that I can bring into it.
Well, that's cool.
It's very cool.
I don't know anybody who hasn't read that cover to cover about a dozen times.
No, I know. And that's another problem that we run into is familiarity, you know, is player familiarity. But considering how old and how well-read G1 through 3 were amongst even the group that I was playing with, everybody was pleasantly surprised with the way that it happened. And that's just cool. Because I pulled out some just stuff that inspired me at the time when they were doing Hall of the Fire Giant King.
Mm-hmm. Other than the themes, I don't know what goes on in those modules.
Oh,
other
okay.
than the brief synopses you've told me.
Gotcha. But like for in Hall of Fire Giant King, the king knew he was about to get hit. He mm-hmm. didn't know who was going to do it. So what he had done was they had taken a bunch of hostages from their raids, and he created a wall of flesh around his hall. He basically chained a bunch of, you know, demi-humans and humans around his hall so that you would have to kill innocents to actually damage his place.
Okay.
So I just kind of – there's nothing in the module about that, obviously.
Uh-huh.
Just one of the things that they play with that I felt free to play with was because Gary or whomever had written it in the introduction says, hey, make this guy as evil and nasty as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's the smartest of all the leaders you're going to come across. They've come across so far. And even okay. he's having his strings pulled by somebody.
Hmm.
But he needs to be cannier and cagier than the prior two.
Mm-hmm. So, but it does tell you that's, you know, the kind of thing he's inclined to do.
Yes.
This is just be as dark as you can with this guy.
Yeah, be darker than you have been in the past with the other ones.
Right.
So
anything that's written like, here's some guidelines, now go to it, is mm-hmm. good.
Yes.
You know, then you can do something that is, you know, whatever gets your party's attention.
I think the good modules are written kind of like that. I think for the most part, uh-huh. they're just outlines with stuff for you to play with.
But several of them in, you know, the ones that I have read are kind of railroads. There's a little bit of a, you have to have a motivation for your character that will make you do this sort of thing.
Right.
And I think there's kind of a two-way there's like a contract between the player and the GM. Mm-hmm. That, okay, the player's not going to say, my character doesn't want anything to do with this, you know, and the GM will then run a game for you.
Right.
You know, because some of them are, in some examples, you know, maybe the player would say, I really don't have any interest in going into that cave. It's dangerous in there.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather, you know, seduce people in town mm-hmm. and set up a temple to my god of debauchery mm-hmm. and make money.
Which is fine because that temple becomes, you know, a source of raiding. The local organized crime comes
sure,
involved.
But the module doesn't get accomplished.
But you can include elements of the module in situations like that. Is what I'm saying.
Sure. Yeah. So, I guess it makes your job harder when the players do not cooperate with the idea of going on the adventure.
It can, but I mean that's again why when I pitched against the Giants, I made them mercenaries.
Mm-hmm.
Seasoned mercenaries who were under contract.
Right.
And at one point, one of the things that they went up to one of the giant leaders said, look, we're under contract. This is how much we're being paid. Can you match it or beat mm-hmm. it? And the Fire King actually said, the Fire Giant King actually said, yeah, I can beat that. Come back to me with a contract and I will sign it and I will pay you X amount.
So did it work out that way or did they change?
They went back to Falcon and said, look, we talked to the Fire Giant King, and he said that he's willing to put us under contract for this. And Falcon goes, you know, there's a big conflict of interest here because we've already put Falcon's signature on the contract to the King of Kioland,
uh-huh.
and we're spending his money. You know, if you can give me the information that I want that will end this contract, then you can go under contract to the Fire Giant King for all I care. Just don't – it can't be a Falcon. It can't be a Falcon signature's contract.
Okay.
And so they went, okay, and they sat down and talked about it. And what they ended up doing was they gathered together all the information that they had gotten up to that point. They went to the King of Kioland. They gave it to him. They went back to the Fire Giant King and said, you know, in agreement with this contract, you're paying us this amount of gold so that you don't attack the human lands anymore.
Okay.
And he said, agreed.
Okay.
We won't attack you and cause you trouble if you leave the human lands alone. And he goes, fine. I'm down with that. Here's my signature. Here's your money. It was a pleasure doing business with you.
And that was the end of the module?
And that was the end of the module.
Nice.
Yeah.
So was that the end of the campaign?
Pretty much. I mean, they had to figure out one more thing.
Okay.
And again, they drew the incorrect conclusion. So that opened the gateway to bring these characters back for Expedition of the Barrier Pigs.
But, well, that is handy.
Yeah.
I haven't had anybody go off the rails that far.
Mm-hmm.
I'm currently running a Legacy of Fire, and one of the players did suggest something similar.
Okay.
But it turns out that that wasn't going to work out for other reasons beyond that player's control.
Oh, okay.
So I've actually run two Paizo Adventure Paths. Legacy of Fire, well, I can't say I have run them. I'm in the process of running. I've run parts of Legacy of Fire. I've run the first part, most of the first part. And I ran 1.5 volumes of the Council of Thieves adventure.
Okay.
Because the GM for another campaign needed a break.
Okay.
And I said, well, I'm running my own homebrew campaign, but I will do the easy thing and take the lazy GM's way. And I will, for you guys, for this group, I will run a module because it'll be a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Okay.
No, it was not.
All right.
I ended up spending more time researching the module and working on that game
Okay.
Then I spent working on my homebrew game, and my homebrew campaign suffered for it.
Interesting.
But the thing about, you know, all of these spending all the time on the modules is that I knew my homebrew world.
Right.
I knew what, you know, where I was going, what the next thing that was probably going to happen, you know, in my homebrew game was going to be. I didn't know anything about where this module was going.
Right. Even having read through it?
Having read through it, I then had to adapt it to this group because they wanted to take the same characters that were part of this story mm-hmm. in another person's campaign
right.
and plug it into the Pathfinder campaign world.
Well, that's exactly why it cost you an effort and time there, dude, because you were trying to do too many things at one time.
It did seem that way.
And you did.
And they didn't really like it.
Well, of course they're not going to, because they've got a whole group of people who are set up for a different campaign trying to, you know, you had to recut the box so that it would fit all of their pegs.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that's kind of the downfall to it.
Well, the campaign that they had come from sort of allowed a dimension hopping sort of thing.
What system did they come from that it wasn't a Pathfinder?
No, it was a Pathfinder system.
Okay.
But it wasn't the Pathfinder, the Paizo Golarian campaign world.
Oh.
They were playing through some series of novels that the GM really adored.
Okay.
And part of the series of modules or of novels was that they hopped from dimension to you know, parallel universes.
Gotcha.
And so he said he needed a break. I said, okay, we're hopping to a parallel dimension. It's Golarian. Mm-hmm. You pop in here. This is what's going on. And you know, there were hooks in the adventure for me to do this.
Okay.
Unfortunately, they were not part of the Galarian campaign world, and as a result, they had no context when they got out of the adventure that they teleported into.
Okay.
Some NPCs were part of organizations that are part of Galarian, and they, you know, they had no connection to that. They didn't care. They were like, you know, you're not the good guy to me. You're the person standing between me and getting home.
Okay.
And so,
which can also be a really cool conflict, quite frankly.
Yeah. But they ended up not trusting an NPC that was supposed to be the employer of the PCs.
Oh, okay.
And so they kept critical information from the NPC.
Okay.
And so the NPC did not give them the information they needed to go on to the next stage.
Okay.
Because they had hidden all of their progress from her.
Okay.
And so they ended up walking into a place that was over their head because they didn't follow up on the clues because they didn't talk to the NPC.
Which is fine, quite frankly.
Well, you know, they survived.
Yeah. But and if anything they should have taken from that not sharing the information probably cost them.
I think the fact that they survived ruined that lesson.
Oh, well, it's just, I don't know. It's one of those things where if they're not going to take anything away from it, then they weren't going to like the module anyway.
Yeah, that's true. A couple, you know, actually, one of them said to me, "I don't like this campaign world. It's too dark."
Well, there you go.
There's too many demons and criminals and shadows and bad things running around.
So apparently, he wanted to be transported to the land of the grandmas and soft kitties.
I think he was mad that there weren't any ponies.
Okay, which is a legitimate gripe, I think.
I think if I had put a pony in there, it would have been a dire pony.
Oh, that's always a good one.
Shadow dire pony.
Gotcha.
That would be cool. Well, cool in a not very cool way.
Okay, so I guess when we come down to the soup and nuts here,
mm-hmm.
does that make us have the clear tag taken away?
Oh, we're well past that. I mean, I might have to go through this and bleep it.
Are canned adventures a bad thing? Are they a crutch or are they something that can be useful?
Right now, running the Legacy of Fire campaign. Mm-hmm. It's been kind of a mixed bag. We're running into issues where there's problems with the published work.
Okay.
Some of the maps don't make sense.
Okay.
There are editing mistakes.
Okay.
That cause me to say something to the group which turns out later to be untrue.
Gotcha.
There's a certain order of things that they of a certain order that they have to do certain things in.
Okay.
And as a result, they might have missed critical information at an important time.
Okay.
They've gotten through it. Some of the things that the NPCs are described as doing mm-hmm. do not get interpreted that way by the players. Like there's one NPC who comes on strongly to the most attractive male character.
Okay.
Well, the most attractive male character felt very threatened and attacked.
That's great.
That is, you know, and I'm trying to convey. Well, I don't know if it is, because I was trying to convey that she was not being threatening.
Yeah, but you see, that's the whole thing. They can come on strongly and not be threatening, and that guy can still be threatened by them. That's a player's choice.
Well, that's true, but I think it's also a little bit meta to feel that way, because as a player, you realize that a certain proportion of the NPCs that you're going to run into are there to kill you. And so, therefore, you have to suspect everybody. As a player, you have to suspect everybody in the module that you meet of trying to kill you.
Oh, you see, conversely, as a character, I think that if this is a guy who isn't comfortable being the best-looking party member, that when he is hit on, perhaps he does feel very threatened. Maybe he's just painfully shy, you know? Whatever.
It came off to me as being a little bit meta.
I'm sure. But, I mean, the thing is that, again, it's one of those things where I guess my question is Legacy of Fire the basis of the campaign?
It's the first, well, Legacy of Fire is the name of the campaign.
Okay, so it is a campaign. You're running Legacy of Fire and you're running the first part
of Legacy
of Fire.
Yeah, Legacy
of Fire
is the name of the adventure path.
Okay.
The first part is actually called Howl of the Carrion King.
Okay.
But I call it Legacy of Fire because that's the name of the overall campaign.
Gotcha. Okay. So, but the way that you pitched it to the characters was, we're going to run a campaign that's completely pre-gen. It's a pre-made deal.
Yes.
And everybody was okay with that.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I just find that interesting because, like I said, I've never seen a long-term campaign based on...
Well, actually, that was kind of part of my pitch. I said, these adventure paths are made to go from 1 to 16. Mm-hmm. I would like to run it as long as you guys want to play it.
Right.
And see how far we get, see if it's fun enough to play through 16 levels,
right?
To see if it's as good as people say,
right?
You know, like I said in the skit, and you know, as kind of an experiment in running an adventure path, because I've never done it.
All right.
I've never done it all the way through, and you know, in my homebrew campaign, we've run from 1 to 12, and now we're taking a break.
Right.
So that's been a couple years, you know, a few years.
No, it really has.
So I'm kind of wondering if I'm going to run Legacy of Fire all the way through without a break. And if I am, how long it's going to take. And, you know, a lot of my motivation is figuring out an experiment, running an experiment in gaming.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a solid one, too. I mean, but again, it's one of those things where I guess my big thing about modules is that while I like them, I would not run an entire campaign based in them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I haven't before. I have stuck modules in to my campaign when I needed a break from having to write stuff up.
Right. Which I think we've
done. And more often than not, I've like gone through all my old modules and ripped maps out of it to populate with my stuff.
Right.
I did that in the same group that I ran the Council of Thieves part for.
Mm-hmm.
I had run another segment for before the novel campaign started, I ran a little bit, and I ripped the map out of one of the WotC 3.5 modules.
Oh, gotcha!
And just populated it for my purposes.
That's cool. It's nice to have the resources.
I used to make maps up all the time.
Right.
But it got to be a little bit silly for me to feel that, you know, every single architect in the D&D world maps to 10x10 squares.
Very true.
But they do, and align everything perfectly north and south. It's weird.
Really? Because some of the maps that I've seen don't do that at all. But they've also been caves, so that could be.
Legacy of Fire doesn't do it very much, or very well. Mm-hmm. There's you have to constantly turn the maps to, you know, to orient north.
Oh, gotcha.
And the worst thing was this battle market area. The maps don't line up correctly.
Oh.
And making, like, there's two stairwells on the bottom level that go up to a second tier.
Mm-hmm.
And I made the maps on gaming paper.
Okay.
And aligned them, and they don't line up.
So one's overhanging the other by a significant amount, then?
There's about a 10-foot difference between the floors in scale.
Well, there you go.
And they're supposed to be, you know, one on top of the other with the, you know, exact fit. But
well,
they don't,
apparently
they
this
don't...
is taking place in Pisa.
Yeah, there it is. Or some place where it's like Escherland.
Yes.
But you know, that's just one of the minor problems with the module. And you know, we nitpick because we do that, because you know, that's kind of like a the vice of nerds.
It's true, but I think you brought this up sooner, that there's got to be a certain level of rework whenever you sit down with a module, because it, you know, it's not a completely fleshed out thing. You know, it's not a finished work.
Yeah.
Even though it's sold as one. But again, I'm not, you see, the complaints that you're going through and the situations that you're going through with your crew and Legacy of Fire kind of, I think, sends it home for me about what works with modules and what doesn't. And to me, I don't think a campaign based in somebody else's world where you actually have to follow paths to get to places is a workable thing for, well, for grown-ups, quite frankly.
Well, we'll see.
So, yeah.
Well, there's, you know, like I said, there's that contract between the player and the GM, and the contract is, I'm going to run this for you. You have to come up with some reason that your character wants to do it. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, a little bit of leeway, but there is that sort of, you know, the contract of railroading. I don't know if there's a term for that.
Yeah, that you're going to follow. You're going to follow the DM's lead.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to. And in most games, you really kind of have to. You know, it's very rare that you can actually succeed in a long-term open sandbox.
No, I mean, there are obviously examples outside of the Pathfinder D&D type of fantasy gaming.
Yeah,
But the
RuneQuest game that we had was very open sandbox.
Right, but the in Burning Wheel tends to be very open sandbox. But again, it's a matter of system, I think, in that case. Mm-hmm.
Right, that could be. So. Okay. Anything else to say? Did we miss anything?
The only thing that I can think that we missed was my White Plume Mountain Rock note.
Okay. Did you want to say it anyway?
No, it's okay.
Okay.
Because we really didn't get into the whole motivation of dungeoneering through Barrier Peaks and White Plume Mountain. So.
Did you play those as a connected series of modules?
Yes.
Did you?
Yes.
Okay. The tournament ones?
Yes.
And did you end up in the Lost Caverns of Sojkanth?
No. One of the reasons why we stopped when we did was because the person who was running them for us went off and joined the army.
Oh, okay.
I
ran the Lost Caverns of Sojkanth for that one other player game that I told you about.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, that was a riot. We loved that one.
I've never played that one.
Oh, there's so much crap in there. It's great. I mean, if you want a module where there's this dungeon that doesn't make any sense.
I don't think a lot of the dungeons make sense in the S series anyway. I think that's what makes them kind of fun, is how Gonzo and you know.
S2 or S4 is like a very, very large collection of monsters, many of which are from the new monster book, I don't think the Monster Manual 2 was published yet.
Okay.
When S4 came out. And I think after S4 came out, the Monster Manual 2 came out, and it had a lot of the monsters from S4.
Oh, wow. The Lost Caverns of Sojkanth.
Yes, Lost Caverns of Sojkanth. I will dig that out.
Cool. I look forward to it.
Yeah, maybe it'll be converted for D&D Next.
Ooh.
That would be cool.
That would be cool.
So, and again, we kind of really stayed on D&D for most of the discussion, but that's the majority of the modules that I've played.
Same here. I mean, I'm not really, I'm trying to think of other ones. I think I played a top secret module. I think I've played a Shadowrun module.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's pretty much it. Everything else has been homebrew.
Right. I was going to talk about the Marvel game.
Oh, right. Yes.
Because we had talked about fitting a module into a campaign.
Yes.
But the Marvel adventures they really seem to be, you know, the adventure is the campaign, and then you put those characters away. There's not a lot of, not a lot of rules or detail on advancing a character or making up a new character or worrying about player balance or, you know, capping a power level.
Gotcha. So you're essentially playing a storyline that's already been played out in the mags.
Exactly. Gotcha. I mean, that's the first, you know, I've only got the basic book so far, the first book so far. Half of that book is the adventure, and that adventure is the first six issues of New Avengers.
Gotcha.
And it's got all of the characters that appear in that.
Right.
And you can, you know, choose which, you know, ones you're going to have with you. You know, you can play You can have the Avengers turn out to be, you know, Captain America and Daredevil, you know.
Yes.
Or you can play Daredevil in, you know, try to enact the campaign as the comics played out. So you can play Daredevil and then, I guess, sit out for the first three sessions because Daredevil didn't join the team right away.
There you go.
In fact, I don't think he even appeared in that story.
That bastard.
You got, all he did in the first six issues was blow Spider-Man's secret identity.
Damn him.
There's a great scene between him and Captain America. This might be before the the New Avengers, but he's talking. Captain America's trying to recruit the New Avengers, mm-hmm. and he goes to Daredevil, and Daredevil says, "No, really, I can't. I've got too much going on. When I think of all the things Peter Parker does in a day, do you know who Peter Parker is?" And, Cap says, "Yeah, he's on the team."
Good one.
Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah, so anyway, so the Marvel game is kind of made for these short stories and then put the characters away, play something else, you know?
Well,
play a different story, play different characters, you know? So that's really, and that's completely different from all the ways that I've played, you know, long-term campaigns in the past, is that I've made these characters up at low levels, tried to advance them through, you know, the campaign, and, you know, try to get, you know, super powerful by the end of the campaign, but Marvel kind of tries to shake that.
Well, I think that's also part of the whole concept behind running it as a mini.
Right.
That it's not supposed to be anything long-term, since it's based on events and characters that were already created and part of, I guess you could go say, the zeitgeist.
Right. So, and, you know, if you look at, you know, some of the characters of Marvel Comics over time, how many of them really change?
Yeah, true.
I mean, a lot of them do change, but in, you know, only in very singular events.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. That's just as a for instance. Oh, that's good. But so that's a different paradigm mm-hmm. for making up a module.
There you go.
Here's a module, and when you're done, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a con game that goes on for a lot longer.
I think that's kind of what they did with some of the earlier modules though too, because they include the characters that were played in the tournament or the con game.
Right. That's true.
Back, so,
yeah.
You know, you could easily just make a quick pickup game.
Yeah, and I think
the system or whatever.
I think the S series actually has like scoring guides for tournaments with the how the module is played.
Jeez.
So anyway, yes. So that's my thoughts on pre-mades.
And those are my thoughts on pre-mades. My two cents.
Is that all we got? Is that all we can think of?
I think so.
I think we've pretty much established what we think.
I believe so.
Okay. So let's close the topic out and let's tell people how to get a hold of us.
Sounds great. You can always get a hold of us at the rulezeropodcast.com website.
Yes, you did it.
Or by emailing us. You can email me at pete@rulezeropodcast.com.
And you can email me as chris@rulezeropodcast.com.
And you can also follow us on Twitter.
You can follow us on the Twitter.
You can like us on Facebook.
You can like us on Facebook. Please like us on Facebook.
Yes.
Not enough people do.
Like us on Facebook. Don't lick us on Facebook.
Really?
That would be just weird.
Well, you can, but we won't feel that because you'll be licking a monitor, and you know, I really hope that you've cleaned it off recently.
Hence the weird statement. Just saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is and we all actually, you know what? We also have a new email address for the show. It is rulezeropodcast@gmail.com.
Oh, fantastic.
And that is a generic address for the show. That is neither you nor me. That is the show.
Great.
And those are the many ways you can get a hold of us. Mm-hmm. And what's our sign out?
Game on.
Game on!
Yeah.
Okay, game on.
Game on.
Rule Zero Podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. You can use our podcast in your music video or send us to your friends and family, but be sure to mention our names on our website at www.rulezeropodcast.com. Segment and closing music is by Maggie Sansone, used by permission, and is available at maggiesmusic.com.
You want to play a game? You want to give it a shot?
Sure. Let's see what you've got.
All right. Cool. Let me get it out. Oh, okay. Let's start over.
What was that?
Did you actually hear that?
Yeah, I did actually.
Oh, because that was an awful long wait.
Oh, no, because you're supposed to say, here we go. I was waiting for you.
Ah, okay. And cut.